You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com. As I mentioned, we are paying attention with 40% of all likely voters, according to this Rasmussen report, saying they are following reports of critical race theory in public schools very closely. Another 33%. Say they are following it somewhat closely. That's a rather large majority. I posed the question. I was just pondering to myself and out loud, what kind of feedback are our school boards getting when it comes to this controversy? And Lance Melton is executive director of the Montana School Boards Association. Been there for a number of years, been involved in education on that level for a lot of years as well, and joins us this morning to talk about this and other things. But let's get this out of the way. Good morning, Lance. How you been?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, hanging in there. You having a fun summer or?
Well, it's fun in the context of helping districts get ready for this upcoming school year and hopefully resume a high degree of normalcy in the way that we operate our public schools. So that's challenging and fun, a little bit busy as well.
I'd like to hear that. A high degree of normalcy, because, yeah. You know, certainly we still have to take precautions, and we'll get into that a little bit. But let's look at this elephant in the room here when it comes to critical race theory. What do you know about it? What are our school boards? What kind of feedback are they getting? Are they getting a lot of feedback on it?
Well, first of all, we're getting lots of questions about what is it? How is the Attorney General's opinion going to affect us? And actually, it might surprise you here, but I don't really see anything controversial in the Attorney General's opinion. To the extent that critical race theory is defined as it has been in Attorney General Knutson's opinion, there shouldn't be really any controversy at all. None of the prohibited activities identified in that opinion have occurred in Montana, and I can't really imagine much of a circumstance where they would, given our local control and the role of elected leaders and the high-quality teachers that we have in our public schools.
Was the opinion from the Attorney General's office merited, and it was requested by the Office of Public Instruction?
Well, you know, I guess it's up to the Attorney General to determine when to issue an opinion, and it's up to the superintendent, among others, to ask for one. So I wouldn't dispute either one of them taking this issue on, but I don't think that there was any allegation that there was any sort of prohibited activity occurring in our Montana's public schools. I mean, certainly no segregating or shaming students on the basis of their race or disciplining or grading them differently on their race or otherwise glorifying racial stereotypes. So, you know, it was sort of a nice affirmation, but very consistent with the way that we've advised our districts for a long time under the 14th Amendment, treating people equally under the law and avoiding any sort of a discrimination on the basis of race or ethnicity or gender and so on.
And then the question follows, does critical race theory, does the teaching, and again, maybe it's not as completely defined as it needs to be, but does that encourage just the opposite of what you expressed?
You know, I think it depends on how it's handled. I absolutely believe that part of our history in the United States includes a candid acknowledgement that we've fallen astray a couple of times along the way. I mean, the fact that slavery existed in and of itself, or the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court documented and perpetuated Jim Crow laws with a separate but equal 30 years after the end of that Civil War, and that wasn't reversed until 1954. So there's definitely history in our country where we've made mistakes, and where sort of a candid recognition of that and certainly an academic discussion of those topics is not only appropriate but necessary.
Lance Melton with us with the Montana School Boards Association. It's a nonprofit membership organization, first founded some 90 years ago. We talked about getting some questions about what it is, and maybe that's difficult to respond to. I don't see it happening a ton in Montana, but you know, we're unique from a lot of these urban centers, and of course our population demographics make that I guess it is what it is. Are we trying to get ahead of it as a school board association, looking at this and saying, you know, how do we educate, how do we address these questions so that we are not facing a controversy like maybe some of these areas are?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think we really have going for us in Montana is the strong tradition and documented constitutional basis of supervision and control in each community. You know, in this day and age, you think about what's gone on with the whole mask and COVID-19 and everything, and these top-down, DC-oriented or even Helena-oriented mandates that come along can't be addressed in the way that you can address it in your local community when you see the person that you've elected and they're immediately accountable and available to you to, you know, either validate what they're doing or chew their ear and suggest a different way. And if there's one thing I've learned over the last year is that we not only have a distinct sort of approach to things here in Montana, but we have as many distinct approaches as there are school districts in some ways. You know, my smallest member has no kids. They're hoping to get them back in the next 2 years so they can continue to survive. And our largest school district member is Billings Public Schools with over 17,000 kids. And we've got everything in between. So, you know, empowering communities and elected leaders in those communities to make key decisions and to make adjustments when they make mistakes and to, you know, continually adjust and dial in the public policy so that it reflects the community's will and their priorities, I think is just a tremendous benefit that we have in Montana that doesn't really exist in many other places.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. I appreciate it. 1,400 elected trustees across the state of Montana, thereabouts, and the Montana School Board Association represents those members. That's just about every school district that is out there in Montana, and there's a ton of them, 400 public school districts and 400-plus and 800-plus public schools. Tom Schultz alongside Lance Melton with us here, Executive Director of the Montana School Boards Association, as we've tackled, you know, what kind of response the school boards are getting regarding critical race theory. And as we get set to get back to this upcoming school year with a high degree of normalcy, I just love that. I'm gonna use that because we need that. Lance, thank you again for being here. So putting CRT aside, then it's sort of part of this controversy, and I'm surprised at how much momentum it has. But folks have been talking about and there's been a lot of blowback against it across the country. But putting cameras in public schools, do you guys have a position on that, or is that does it take you by surprise that this is now part of the discussion nationwide?
Well, it kind of depends on which aspect we're talking about. I think cameras in the classroom, just as a means of providing an individualized response to the pandemic, may be here to stay. There are certain ways that we need to make sure that we handle that in order to protect privacy of students in the classroom. Both federal and state laws require it, and there's technological solutions that can make it happen. So in that regard, I think that going forward, you know, schools have an obligation not just to serve kids in the classroom, but to also reasonably accommodate kids that have disabilities that might require a different environment. And with some of those what we call comorbidities, I guess, under the COVID-19 can increase the likelihood of a serious illness from COVID-19. And there are circumstances where districts have reasonably accommodated students with disabilities and provided them remote instruction. So, you know, that necessitates a technological solution. So in that context, you know, I think that it's pretty well ironed out. Districts are aware of how they operate those, the technological solutions to keep the camera zoomed on the instructor and avoid unnecessary or inadvertent inclusion of private information of students. Beyond that, I don't think that there's quite a bit of discussion right now on it. We have had discussion in the past about the role of video cameras on school buses, both to monitor behavior and to capture traffic offenses.
And with just about less than a minute left here then, not a ton of discussion. Have you heard from the teachers' union, or have you gotten some feedback from the educators on this issue?
Well, I can tell you this. If you were implementing the use of cameras for the first time, under Montana law, you would have to bargain that change in working conditions with the staff. And it wouldn't surprise me, you know, over the years, there have been times when we've had off-site instruction and so on and so forth, and there have been bargaining sessions over who owns that content, how many times can it be replicated. So there's definitely differing points of view that you might expect to crop up between those representing the teachers and those representing the district. But the bottom line is that we've got to solve that much in the way that we solve other issues locally through the bargaining process that's mandated by Montana law.
Lance Melton with the Montana School Boards Association will pick up masks in schools when we come on back with more here on Voices.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
We appreciate you joining us, making us a part of your Montana mornings. Two decades strong, working on three, can't hold a candle to the Montana School Boards Association. 9 decades strong and working on 10. Lance Melton is with us here, director, executive director of the MSBA. And if you're looking for information, ton of good stuff on their website and what they, who they represent. Membership is voluntary. It's decided by a motion of each elected school board and is available to any publicly elected K-12 school board in Montana, MTSBA.org. Lance, appreciate you being on the program here. Want to talk a little bit about a couple of things on the agenda about masks. I think one thing we noted, the legislature, I think got pretty good marks from educators across the state. I wonder what your thoughts on that as we have time to explore other issues here.
Sure. Well, first of all, with regard to masks, one of the things that I really liked that just came out yesterday is that the CDC has finally acknowledged that school districts can use local health data to guide decisions about when to tighten or relax prevention measures that they're recommending. That's a real game changer here, because up until now, we've been a little bit on pins and needles. Our schools have been operating more openly than the rest of the nation for the last year. In fact, many of our districts never closed other than the 2 week period of time when they were required to do so back in March 2020. And there are other states where, you know, people haven't even started in-person instruction yet. So we've been a little bit out of sync. And this this increased flexibility that the CDC announced yesterday is a welcome development. It's going to allow our school districts to go forward. Most of them are already relieving mask requirements or at least reducing them. The whole idea here, again, is to get this next school year operating with a high degree of normalcy. And this new development from the CDC makes that more likely.
What was the response? I have teachers in my family. I always appreciate the institution, the industry. I said a couple of times, you know, that I can't imagine the school year that that they had to prepare for and execute. And, you know, and I know the kids, of course, there's a difference between in-house or in-school instruction and remote, but there was a lot of hybrid models out there. I thought that accommodated a lot of things. I did hear from, back from a lot of them, you know, the masks, the kids got used to them, but they were always a distraction. What's your assessment of how this last school year went, Lance?
Well, okay, so MTSBA has been around for 95 years, and I've only been around for 25 of them. I will tell you, I could not have been prouder of our members' efforts in the last year than in the entire rest of my career.
Yeah.
The districts turned on a dime. Some of them were already providing instruction even during the two-week period of hiatus when Governor Bullock had a shelter-in-place rule in place. And they just have done a real heroic job with an admittedly politically charged issue. You know, you can't find a community where there's unanimity on what schools should do or should have done. But I can tell you that our school districts worked with a common denominator of ensuring student and family relevance and preference in every decision that they made. And so, you know, we had some districts that were in counties where there might have been only one or even zero incidents of COVID-19, and others where it was kind of raging. And the way that our districts handled that diversity and the speed at which they made these decisions, boy, I'll just tell you, I give them high marks. And, you know, if you think you just listen to that out, that sort of community dialogue out there and how divisive things have become, remember that our elected volunteer trustees have been at the table listening to and doing their best to balance those differing points of view in school boards across this state, over 300 school boards operating together across this state.
Well said, and thank you for that. And I've given them a pat on the back, our teachers, our school board members. There was just, as you talked about, the politics behind this and schools as much as possible. They politics just gets in the way. So you know, they charge on with their curriculum and trying, I think, doing the best that they can given resources that they have. Let me ask this and kind of go back a little bit. How I know we have a public board of education, which mm-hmm. by statute, constitutionally, the governor must appoint members, and they must be. It's designed to be a nonpartisan board that develops our curriculum. Talk about the curriculum in our schools and how much school boards have control over it. How much parents have input into that? How is our school curriculum developed?
First of all, the division of responsibility between the Board of Public Education and local school boards is fairly clear. The Board of Public Education at a state level is to basically establish minimum standards. And so they identify standards that address, at least by topic, certain coursework that must be completed, also certain things that students should be able to know and do at certain ages. But then they turn it over to the local elected school board and their community in determining the curriculum that's going to best meet those objectives. And so the Board of Public Education doesn't have much, if any, of a role in establishing curriculum in each community. They set the standards, and the curriculum has to be adapted to those standards so that we can achieve what the Board of Public Education envisions for us. But then you have a community discussion and differing emphases based upon community values and particular needs within a community. Maybe there's a heavy emphasis on CTE in one community and maybe a heavy emphasis on dual credit or advanced placement courses in another place. Those are going to yield different decisions on selection of curriculum. The key is a community conversation informed by education leaders. So, you know, choices of curriculum and alignment to standards is a professional activity of people who have advanced degrees in curriculum development, and we certainly lean heavily on them for that expertise. But the community itself and the elected school board are in the driver's seat in terms of selection of curriculum in each community.
Boy, I like that about Montana. Are we still under Common Core standards?
The standards as the board has adapted them now are not really so much on a Common Core basis. I mean, they do incremental changes by chapter, so you know, it's sort of a thing that evolves over time. And for example, right now there are discussions. They're not exactly relevant to the outcome standards here, but they're talking about Chapter 55, which is the overall accreditation for schools, as well as Chapter 57 and 58. There's a real formalized process for the accreditation of preparation programs, and that's where it begins, is you know, preparing educators to come into the classroom and teach students according to the standards. So that's kind of where the action is going on right now. I haven't seen an awful lot of focus on Common Core in some time.
The state legislature did take a step in the right direction, I think, when it comes to moving forward on the trades education, would you say?
Yeah, and I'm glad to have participated in a partnership on that. We were heavily involved in passing legislation that enhances the opportunities for kids, turns the focus away from instruction as merely an output. In other words, what will we provide to these students? And instead focuses on the outcome of effective learning. House Bill 246 was a game-changing development in that regard, where we changed the definition of instruction to focus on work-based learning, experiential learning, recognizing that learning occurs in and out of the classroom alike.
Lance Melton, Executive Director of the Montana School Boards Association, as I mentioned, represent over 1,400 elected trustees. These are almost volunteers, essentially, and locally elected school board members. So preparations for this upcoming season, what are some of the challenges still? What are some of the hurdles?
Well, so, you know, we do now have acquiescence from the CDC that decisions can be made locally as to the masks, and that seems to be the X factor right now of, you know, the issue that has the potential to trip us up a bit. There's one remaining issue that we're trying to get resolved through our congressional delegation, and that's that we believe that CDC has sort of overstepped their bounds in relying on an executive order of President Biden to require masks on school buses. And they're treating school buses just like they would an airplane or a subway or a train, Amtrak, for example. We think that's incorrect. The federal law that they rely upon actually specifically excludes school buses from the definition of public transportation. And so they're a little bit out of their lane. And we have brought that to the attention of our entire congressional delegation, asked them to work with us in expressing concern. You know, sometimes those things will move rather quickly, and sometimes they may lag behind. But as it stands right now, there is a big challenge there in that it's not guidance. It's an actual order, just like when you hop on Delta Airlines and fly somewhere, that a mask has to be worn on those school buses. And we think that's a bit tone deaf.
Interesting. And then, but foundationally, school buses, according to, is it law or policy, are not considered public transportation. So you have a big leg to stand on there.
I think we do. I mean, they're relying on President Biden's order, and President Biden's order calls on his executive branch agencies to develop mask requirements on public transportation. And he specifically references a section of the federal law that when you go to it says public transportation does not mean a school bus. So many of the other federal agencies that might step into this and impose something have chosen not to, but the CDC is the one agency that has on the books, there's an order. It's just like going out to the airport, and you know what's going to happen there if you have a fight with a flight attendant, and not that that's going to happen on our school buses, but
right. Nonetheless,
it's treated the same. And we think that the CDC has that wrong.
Will there be a resolution before this upcoming school season starts?
I'm sure hoping. We've brought it to the attention of Senators Daines and Tester and Congressman Rosendale and through their education services staff. And we are kind of waiting to hear back on what might occur there. So, you know, our congressional delegation has been pretty effective over the years in getting things done when you might be surprised. You know, they all carry quite a bit of weight, you know. So we'll see, but if not, you know, schools are going to have to start this next school year with discretion over whether masks are used in our schools, but little discretion, if any, on school buses. Maybe we'll hand out bottles of water and tell them to sip on the way.
Yeah, right.
Like they do on the planes.
Lance, anything else here? I'm curious as to, you know, if I just ask an open-ended question, maybe it's not fair, but, you know, if there's a school district that comes to mind that's making waves in a positive way, that's really outworking itself, so to speak, are there a couple that come to mind that you can highlight?
You know, there are so many who are doing remarkable things right now. I do a disservice if I even started down the list.
I know.
I'll tell you that what I see that I'm really excited about is people recognizing the lessons that they've learned from the pandemic and incorporating those not just to avoid missteps, but to create new opportunities for kids to recognize increasingly that a personalized approach to learning for each child in every public school is the agenda of the day. And I'm really seeing sort of a sea change in our members, making sure that they don't lose the opportunity that's presented here. You know, there's a lot of bad things that have happened from COVID-19, but one of the good things is that it's shaken up the status quo and given us reason to hit the reset button and say, do we really want to continue to do it this way? Is there a better way to do it? And I really just, I see districts across the state asking those questions and contemplating them in their board meetings. It's the very best of governance right now.
Does that apply to parents as well? Lessons learned?
Oh.
And
yes. I could even speak from my own experience, but I won't get into it too much. But my goodness, you know, recognizing the fragility of kids and the importance of a normal, predictable environment for them to learn in and just grow.
Lance, thank you for your time. Appreciate that and tackling this controversial topic with us and always updating on our public school systems. It's very important to Montanans and us here as well. And have a little bit of fun. Try to find some time for fun, but I know a lot of preparation going and it kicks in gear here very shortly. So Thanks for all the work, Lance.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity and glad to participate anytime.
We'll catch up with you again. Lance Melton, Executive Director of the Montana School Boards Association. Again, it's mtsba.org.